Yes, this is real music. Dark, broody, important, groundbreaking. Check out the lyrics. Darkness. No parents. Continue darkness. More darkness. Get it?
It's time for Smith v. DiCriccio, Dawn of Film Book Cast, the official podcast of filmbook.com. Like the movie our new title reflects, there won't actually be much of a versus match between us, but we will still be brooding a lot and murdering people all over the place.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Right?
Yeah, that's probably that's par for the course for this podcast.
Yeah, that's been like a running thing we had, like the podcast games.
Right.
Murder all over the place.
Yep.
All right, my name is Mike Smith, and joining me as always is a man who really just wants to see Thomas and Martha Wayne die again because he doesn't think he got it the first 30 times.
Yeah, I'm not really sure of the impact of that scene. So
can we just rewind? Let me play that again, maybe?
Yep. That's Mike DiCriccio. I forgot what you were talking about before we made a joke.
All right. And I've never listened to Film Book Cast before. Essentially, we start with some film news, and then we move on to some discussions where Mike and I each discuss our media we've been consuming lately. After that, we'll move on to our featured review. This week, we're reviewing the new films from director Zack Snyder and the sequel to Man of Steel, Batman v. Superman, Dawn of Justice. But before we get into that, let's get on to some film news. And for the first bit of film news I wanted to talk about, because this is the biggest film news of the last couple of weeks. And also, it happened while we were recording our last podcast, and so we didn't see it until after it was done.
Yep.
And we were both like, ah, god damn it. But
I'm pretty sure it was on purpose. They monitor us.
Right.
And then wait to break new stories till after we can't talk about them.
Yeah, I think Disney just has it out for this podcast, I think is what it is.
Yeah. They're still sore over their
fail.
They're sore over their loss from the podcast games.
Does Disney have their own podcast? Is that why they were in the podcast games?
Sure, why not? I don't know.
All right. Well, anyway, the big film news this past couple weeks is that Disney has announced they're doing Indiana Jones 5. It's happening, and Steven Spielberg's coming back, and Harrison Ford's returning as Indiana Jones.
Yeah, that's the thing that's happening.
Yeah, it's...
I'm excited? Question mark?
I'm pretty into it. I think it'll be good. Here's the thing. It's coming out on July 19th, 2019. That's the date they've set. They're getting David Koepp to write the movie, who was the writer of Kingdom of the Crystal Skull.
Right.
Which is a movie that I still like. I don't know about you or
not
most
so
people.
Much. He did write a lot of... Didn't he write, like, Jurassic Park or something?
He wrote Jurassic Park, Mission Impossible, a lot of other movies. You know, I think Spider-Man, also one of the Spider-Mans. And, you know, he was the writer and director of Premium Rush, which was fucking awesome.
That's not what I thought you were going to say.
Really? Have you seen Premium Rush?
I have not seen Premium Rush.
Oh, man, I own that on Blu-ray. It is great.
Somehow I'm not surprised.
It is awesome. It has Joseph Gordon-Levitt being a dick. Has Michael Shannon being hilarious. And it's a really great like action movie, actually. It's like a lot of just chasing around New York City on a bike. It's got a great soundtrack. It's awesome. It's people should definitely check out Premium Rush. If they are just like casting it away sight unseen like you are.
That's exactly what I'm doing.
You know, I think I should make you watch it at some point. It's great. It's awesome.
All right. Fair enough.
But anyway, Indiana Jones 5 is happening. And, you know, like a lot of questions came about, like as it's happening, like, is Harrison Ford too old to play the role? Which is a question that people had when Kingdom of Crystal Skull came out, which was almost 10 years ago.
Well, that's almost 10 years now?
2008.
Holy crap.
8 years ago. By the time this movie comes out, it'll be 11 years since Kingdom of Crystal Skull.
Wow. That's insane.
Yeah, but that said, I don't think Harrison Ford is too old to play the role. I mean, they're going to have... It's obviously going to be different than the first three Indiana Jones movies.
Right.
I don't think he'll be, you know, surviving plane crashes in a raft anytime soon, but...
Who knows? Maybe he'll survive a nuke in a fridge.
I like that scene. I think that's a pretty good scene. I don't think that's any more ludicrous than him surviving the plane crash in a life raft.
All right, that's,
in Temple of Doom. Or, you know, he also met an immortal knight once. Like, people... Raiders of the Lost Ark has a Nazi monkey spy. This is a very silly franchise.
That's all right. I mean, it's a good point.
But in any case, no, I don't think Ford is too old to play the role because we just saw him kick ass as Han Solo again, like just recently.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true.
You know, and he did that and he's doing Blade Runner 2. It seems like he's just going to do sequels to all of his old movies, which is what we've said he would do
mm-hmm.
before. So, you know, Air Force 2, coming.
Oh, man.
It's gotta.
I can't wait.
What was it? Two Witness, Two Furious? Should happen soon. The Tugitive?
The Tugitive. Oh, my God.
I think there's a lot of good stuff to mine here.
Jeremy Lin's going to have a very promising career. Just doing all the sequels.
You said Jeremy Lin, the basketball player?
I did say Jeremy Lin. That's not what I meant. Oh, God damn it. That's how messed up I am from seeing Batman vs. Superman, which we'll get to.
Okay, I'm gonna choose to believe that you actually want Jeremy Lin to direct these movies, which could actually turn out amazing. You never know.
Hey, it's possible, I guess.
Wasn't he, like, lousy at basketball, or wasn't that...
I mean, he was good for, like, 5 games or something.
All right, fair enough.
All right, let's just move on to the next thing.
Well, I have a couple other questions, but I mean...
Oh, okay.
So Indiana Jones 5, I mean, part of the big thing about this thing, George Lucas won't be involved.
Right.
Just like Star Wars. And, you know, George Lucas was heavily involved in Indiana Jones, and a lot of people point to his involvement with Kim Crystal Skull as a lot of the reasons why people don't like that movie. You know, he's the one who really fought for aliens and, like, the whole sci-fi concept behind that movie.
And somehow, I'm not surprised by that. if his lack of involvement in The Force Awakens is any indication, I think this will be a great movie.
I mean, I love George Lucas, and yeah, but yeah, I totally get that. Like,
yeah,
it makes sense to me, and if part of me is like, oh man, what's this franchise going to be without George Lucas? Because I don't think he screwed up Indiana Jones as badly as he did Star Wars, you know?
Right.
Like, it was just one movie that a lot of people didn't like, but I liked. And, you know, that's enough for me. But
yeah.
But in any case, I mean, Spielberg's still involved, and that's what's really exciting to me, is that he's coming back to direct this movie. But one thing about this movie, you know, there's rumors going around that maybe, like, a young actor will be playing a young Indiana Jones in this movie, kind of like how River Phoenix played young Indy in Last Crusade.
Right.
And I think Mike Ryan from uprocks.com tweeted something pretty funny and actually kind of true, which is that it would be kind of weird if the actor who plays young Han Solo didn't also play young Indiana Jones. and kind of take over the franchise.
Yeah. I don't know. I think that, like, sure, it could be young Indy. I don't know. I have no idea what this is going to be about.
True. Basically. Yeah, I mean, we'll find out more as time goes on. But, you know, it's not going to be for a little while. Steven Spielberg has at least 2 other movies in the works before this is coming out. The BFG is coming out this year. Ready Player One is coming out in 2018. And then Indiana Jones 5. And, you know,
Indiana Jones.
Yeah. And Spielberg, there could be more. Like, Spielberg works on a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
A lot of the time. So, yeah, we'll know. See. But, that's Indiana Jones 5. I want to talk about that because I'm pretty excited about it. You know, I love Indiana Jones.
Yeah, I don't have a lot to say so far because it was just announced, but I am excited for it, albeit kind of tentatively because I don't know. I'm excited for it. It'll be interesting to see what they do. Harrison Ford is going to be I forget how old he is will be.
He's going to be in his late 70s, I think, by the time Indiana Jones comes out.
And while he did kick ass in Star Wars, his stunt work was pretty minimal in the film. I mean,
right? Know, yeah,
which is kind of the whole fun of Indiana Jones. Like we were talking.
Maybe this will be like Creed, where you know you have the son of Belloc from Raiders of the Lost Ark training under Indiana Jones, and you know, and so the son of Belloc's doing all the work while Indiana Jones kind of in the corner going like, "Yeah, go get him, go get those Nazis." Yeah. Or whatever.
Showing him how to use a bullwhip or something.
Yeah. You never... There's ideas. There's definitely things we can do. Yeah. I think one thing we won't be seeing is Shia LaBeouf.
I hope to God not.
I mean, I'm pretty sure that, like, you know, fan reaction to Kingdom of the Skull was pretty lousy. And so, and Spielberg knows it. Spielberg has been on record saying that he has made mistakes on Crystal Skull, that it's not the movie that he wanted to make or stuff like that. A lot of it was George Lucas. And, you know, I like the idea behind Crystal Skull a lot. Because it takes place in the 50s, they based it more on like B-movie sci-fi stuff as opposed to the first three, which were based on adventure serials of the 30s.
Right. I'm excited to see if they updated any more to a different decade.
I feel like they would have to. I think presumably this would take place in the 60s.
Yeah.
And I think it would be really cool if they just did like
an exploitation movie.
I was not going to say that.
That would be the best thing ever.
I was going to say like an espionage spy thriller with like Indiana Jones as like an aging spy or something.
Right, that makes a lot more sense. But I guess exploitation is more 70s, though.
So that yeah, that sense. Would be more 70s. Yeah. But, yeah. All right, so moving on from Indiana Jones 5, I do want to mention a couple of things, first of which is that Amazon is doing a new TV series based on The Tick, which have you seen The Tick TV show, Mike?
I have not seen it, but I am familiar with what it is.
Okay, yeah. For those unfamiliar, The Tick was a comic book, and it was famously made into a TV show. It was like a cult TV show.
Yeah.
Starring Patrick Warburton as The Tick. And it's a superhero TV show, and it's a comedy show. I have seen bits and pieces of The Tick. Here's the thing. There was a point in time, like last year or 2 years ago, when my roommate lost his job. And before he got another one, he was spending most of his time sitting on the couch smoking weed in our living room.
Yep, that sounds about right.
And in that time, he would watch a lot of stuff on Netflix, and I would join him every once in a while, and he got into a period where he was really into The Tick.
That's the best sentence I've ever heard.
And so I ended up seeing a few episodes of The Tick here and there, and it's really funny. It's a really good show. Okay. And Patrick Warburton has been fantastic in that show as The Tick. But here's the thing. Patrick Warburton or the rest of the cast, it won't be returning to the show. It's basically going to be this whole new thing.
So it's a reboot of The Tick.
Basically, yeah. So it's not like a revival series. That's one of the more popular things to do these days.
Yeah.
This is a full-on reboot of The Tick. And Peter Serafinowicz has been cast as The Tick.
Okay.
It looks like you're blanking on who that is.
I know the name, but I can't put a face to it.
He's the British guy. He's in Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz. And he's in Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah, okay.
Right. And I think he's great casting. I think he's actually a really great choice. When they announced that Patrick Warburton wasn't coming back, my immediate reaction was, well, like, Warburton's so good as that character, and, like, he embodies it so well, I couldn't really picture anybody else in the role. But once they announced Serafinowicz, I was like, well, he could actually do it very well. Because you need, like, kind of just a lunk-headed, like, just really tall guy who can play very dumb.
Right.
And, I think... I'm pretty stoked for it. You know, I don't have Amazon yet. One of these days I'll get it. But
one of these days.
But, the Tick TV show is something that really piques my interest for Amazon.
Right. Yeah, it seems like a very odd, specific choice for them to go with.
Yeah, definitely.
The Tick of all superhero or anything, really.
I mean, it has, like, a very small fan base. And they are very... Yeah. It's a very passionate fan base, I think. And it is a funny show. I'm not sure if the show is still on Netflix, but it is a very funny show. That show stars Nestor Carbonell, who is the mayor in Nolan's Batman movies, as like the suave Spanish superhero. And he's, it's just a really silly, funny show. And like the entire show is Patrick Warburton in this full body blue Tick costume.
Right.
And that's like half the joke. It's very silly. And Ben Edlund, who is the creator of the Tick, will be writing and executive producing this show.
Okay.
So that's neat. He's currently a writer on Gotham, actually. But
No.
Well, it's not like he's the creative force on Gotham. He's just like a guy who writes on it. But
yeah. I mean, it'll be interesting. It could be a. I feel like a show like The Tick is, that kind of concept is the most relevant today. It was kind of a before its time type thing.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I feel
poking
like...
Poking fun at superhero culture and all that, so...
Exactly. And now there's so many superhero shows on TV.
Right.
Right? I feel like, you need... Like, there's no superhero comedy shows on TV right now. There's a few in the works. I know NBC's having, like, a show based in the DC Comics universe called Powerless, or something along those lines, where it's about people who are, like, trying to live in this world of superheroes who have no powers. Like they work in like an insurance company or something.
Okay, that's kind of funny.
Yeah, and I know Danny Pudi's in that show. Like they're shooting that now, and there's a couple people. I think Alan Tudyk's in it too. So that's kind of exciting. And Marvel's doing their show called Damage Control, which is about the people who clean up after the superheroes after they make their destructive
after their
messes.
Fights.
So there's fun stuff happening, but this is like The Tick. Like this is like the premier superhero comedy kind of thing. So kind of excited, but we'll see what happens.
Yeah.
And then the other big news is that this past week, I think, Georgia was trying to pass like an anti-gay bill that would allow businesses to not serve like people whose beliefs don't line up with their beliefs kind of thing.
Right.
And the film and TV production industry just threatened to boycott Georgia entirely. And Georgia has become like a huge state for film and TV production.
Yeah, there's a lot of stuff that happened. They must have phenomenal incentives, I guess, for them to come.
Yeah,
film there.
I'm sure it's like a lot of tax stuff going on.
Yeah,
So a lot of companies just like threatened to flat out walk, like leave Georgia forever, including Marvel, who films most of their movies there. AMC, who films The Walking Dead there, like that, those would be huge losses for Georgia, yeah. And I imagine like those create so many jobs and everything like that. So this earlier today, the Georgia governor vetoed the bill. So
it's awesome.
Yeah, that's awesome. So it's very cool.
Yeah, it's also interesting too that North Carolina just last week, I believe it was a couple of days ago, passed an anti-trans law forcing people to use restrooms that coincide that you know. Or coincide with their birth certificate, so right. Which is bullshit.
Right.
And now, I forget what company, Apple, the NFL, the NBA, the NCAA, like all these huge companies and organizations are now threatening to move out of North Carolina if they don't repeal this bill. So hopefully that happens there also,
yeah.
Considering it worked in Georgia.
Right.
So, progress.
Yeah, no, definitely good. I feel like you know, corporations have caught on to the fact that they look really good when they take a progressive stance on things, which
right. It's good. Kind of a you know, even if it's motivated by money, at least it's in the good way. Again, yeah. Go the right direction, I guess, or at least a direction that I agree with.
Absolutely, yeah.
So we'll see what happens.
Yeah, but yeah, I just did want to mention that because that's pretty cool. But we can move on to our discussions now, Mike.
All right.
So why don't you start? What's your discussion for today?
All right, so this week I'm talking about Daredevil Season 2, which
all right.
Came out on Netflix, I think, a week and a half or 2 weeks ago, probably.
Right, and you watched it all very quickly, right? Like in a week?
Yeah, in a couple of days. It's interesting how similar and yet different it is to Season 1.
Okay.
I'll try not to get into any spoiler things, but I loved season one. We've talked about it. You were kind of lukewarm or enjoyed it, but it wasn't. Yeah, it didn't blow.
Yeah, I thought season one was fine. It had some moments and it had some really good elements, but yeah, it wasn't totally for me most of the time.
Yeah. So I was on board with season one all the way. The unfortunate thing is that season two, for me, is kind of just more of season one, and with that should be a good thing in theory, but with how innovative and different Jessica Jones was.
Okay.
Having the same thing of more of Daredevil, which I understand it's different shows, but I don't know how to say it without like they're setting up these shows as being different,
right?
Yet like just kind of wink, wink, nudge, nudge, they're all going to be the same one day. But we all know what the schedules of the movies, the schedules of the shows. We all know when these things are happening.
Okay.
And it's kind of just like, get on with it already. Like, we don't need to just be like, oh, wink, wink, I heard about another person like you in this neighborhood. And we know, we just watched 13 episodes of Jessica Jones. We know who she is.
Okay, fair enough.
That's my biggest complaint, is that it's kind of taking its time, which I mean is fine. I just want more of them being together.
So you're saying this season like kind of ramps up like referencing the outside universe a little bit?
Yeah, I mean there was references to the Avengers in season one, you know,
right?
The
every once in a while, yeah,
and all that stuff. And there's characters that mention other, I forget what they don't say superhero enhanced or whatever they call them. I don't remember. And it you know it kind of is starting to build towards that because the next series is Luke Cage in September,
right?
So I want them to talk about each other, because.
You don't have to say like, oh, there's another person there. You can just say, hey, it's Jessica Jones. Like,
right? Yeah, exactly. Especially because the character, I don't. That's spoiler things, I guess. I don't know how much is spoiler things. And then the show also it features the Punisher and Elektra as they have put out in the trailers and stuff.
Right, and I heard they're great.
They're awesome. Plot lines are amazing. That's the one thing. That's what makes the show this season. Kind of annoyed me about this season was there's kind of the A plot of Matt Murdock and him as a lawyer and his, you know, his, that whole thing. And then there's the B plot of Daredevil and that whole thing. But really it should be the other way around where the A plot is about Daredevil in this crazy secret underworld of whatever's going on. And then like also this stuff about him being a lawyer.
That's interesting. That's really interesting. 'Cause I remember like the first season I was pretty interested in the lawyer, Matt Murdock, but was not that interested in him as Daredevil.
As Daredevil, okay.
So this might actually, dig this season more. Who knows? Yeah. I haven't seen it yet, but we'll see.
Yeah, the first season took me, I think, about 3 episodes before I was like, oh, hell yeah, I'm going to watch all of these. And this season, I think it took me 5 before I was kind of like, okay, yeah, I'll keep going. Like, you know, yeah. Like, you know what I mean? I wasn't hooked as quickly. And
I mean, you had already watched 5 episodes though. And then you were like, yeah, I guess I'll keep going.
Exactly.
But you were already going, like you were in.
I was already, well, yeah, I don't know. I was kind of doing it cause I knew I was going to watch them all anyway, but okay. Like I wasn't hooked and I didn't want to keep going as quickly as I did in season 1. The fight scenes and all that, I do love that about this show, the kind of martial arts, and having long takes and, you know, we get to see fights instead of just like, ooh, there's a fist and like a shaky cam and then like it's darkness and I can't see, and, you know, we actually get to see what's happening in these fights, which is nice, and exciting. But this show, the plot has, you know, the Punisher stuff going on, and then it kind of grinds to a halt to do this whole legal drama thing in the middle of the season for like 4 or 5 episodes that I was kind of just, that was when I was like, the A plot needs to be Daredevil, not Murdoch. Cause there's so much ramping up in the Daredevil underworld part that we then have to take a break from for so many episodes to do this legal drama thing and then go back to the Daredevil story, which bothered me about this season. So those are my thoughts.
Well, you're actually making me much more excited for it. Cause I'm more into Murdoch the lawyer than I am Murdoch as Daredevil, at least in the show. So, and the first season really didn't have him as the lawyer much at all.
Right.
Like, it kind of was just really focused on him as Daredevil, and there was a little bit of lawyer stuff. So, you know, maybe I'll dig this.
You may enjoy it. Some more character stuff needs to, I don't know. He's, you know, season 1 is him becoming Daredevil, and season 2 is him being Daredevil.
Right.
But, like, with the same character beat as season 1 of, like, Catholic guilt. For 13 episodes. So I don't... I just want them to hurry up and move on. Get to the Defenders already is what I'm saying.
So impatient, Mike. That's the kind of attitude that makes Batman v Superman Dawn of Justice.
That's true, I guess. But even that, we had 2 seasons of stuff before I feel this way. Not do it. Get 9 movies in 1 movie.
All right.
Of my opinion of Batman vs Superman.
Yeah. oh man, we're gonna have a fun review in a little bit, but I have like pages and pages of notes. All right. Let's move on to my discussions. But it sounds like Daredevil season 2. It sounds like you enjoyed it, but not as much as season 1.
Overall, it's still good. I feel like most people are still going to watch it anyway.
Yeah, I do plan on watching it soon. I don't think I ever got to talk about Jessica Jones on this podcast, but I love Jessica Jones. I thought that show was amazing and like
perfect in every way.
Yeah, I think it's easily like the best superhero TV show of the modern superhero TV show age that we have now. And I watch pretty much all of them. So
yeah, that kind of, I think authority. That also coming off of Jessica Jones into Daredevil season 2, it just didn't do enough. I don't think Jessica Jones was so different and unique and awesome. And it gets the benefit of being like the noir crime story thing, which is close to my heart.
Yeah. I'm into that too. So,
All right. On to yours.
Okay. So my discussions, I have 2 movies I wanted to talk about, both animated movies. The first of which is a movie you talked about last week, Zootopia. And Zootopia is the new Disney animation movie directed by Byron Howard and Rich Moore. Rich Moore directed Wreck-It Ralph. And as well as worked on The Simpsons and Futurama for a number of years. And the movie stars Jennifer Goodwin and Jason Bateman as the main duo. I think it's often creative. It's pleasant to look at. There's a very fun chemistry between Goodwin and Bateman. But I was not as on board with this movie as a lot of people were. You know, this movie has like a 99% on Rotten Tomatoes. It's gotten phenomenal reviews all across the board. I found its message very troubling.
Okay.
I think the movie's racial politics and message are kind of all over the place. It never felt to me like I had a firm grasp on what it was trying to say. And often it kind of feels like it's sort of saying the wrong thing, but for the right reasons. Like, the movie's very, like, adamant against discrimination, and, like, I appreciate that. I appreciate the movie tried to say something about it, and, like, but at the same time, like, it paints, like the analogies there for like the minority group in this movie to be African Americans in the U.S. Right, like they're okay. It's like 90% prey, 10% predators, and that's I think the problem is that they're referred to as predators throughout the movie.
Right,
but it kind of creates this weird thing because like prey is afraid of predators throughout the movie, and it's used as an analogy for like the majority people being scared of minority people. But the thing is, like, prey should be afraid of predators. Like, they're animals.
yes, sure.
Which is why I think the metaphor doesn't really make sense, and I think it's kind of troubling in certain ways. And I don't know, the movie doesn't work for me. And I feel the movie's generally fun and as creative, but I feel like its message is kind of all over the place. And even then, like, you know, Judy Hopps is the main character, and she's treated as discriminated against for a while, but then she's kind of on the opposite side of things, and I feel like it never got a firm grasp on where her character stood in relation to what it was trying to say. Like, there's a joke early on in the movie where, you know, she says, like, somebody calls her cute, and she's like, oh, no, you can't call me cute. Only other bunnies can call other bunnies cute.
Right.
Kind of thing. And it's like, that's an odd joke.
Yeah.
Considering what happened, like, where the movie goes later, and I don't know. The movie overall is kind of mixed for me. I wasn't really big on it. I didn't think the standout scene is the sloth scene, which is amazing.
Right. Nothing could take away from that.
Yeah, it's some perfect kind of like timing right there. It's kind of like its own little mini movie inside the movie. And that's great. And yeah, I mean, and there's fun stuff, and it does have like a fun, like noirish kind of detective plot, which I do enjoy. But, you know, in any case, I enjoyed the movie, but it wasn't really for me. I think Disney's has made better animated movies in the past few years that are, you know, stronger. But I appreciate the movie tried to do what it did. It just didn't really work for me.
Fair enough.
And then the other movie I want to talk about is Anomalisa, which is the new Charlie Kaufman movie, directed by Kaufman and Duke Johnson. Duke Johnson was the director of Abed's Uncontrollable Christmas, which is the Community stop motion episode.
Why that's related.
And also one of the best episodes, like probably my favorite episode of Community, and also one of the best Christmas specials ever made. The movie stars David Thewlis, Jennifer Jason Leigh, and Tom Noonan. And this is a beautifully stop-motion animated movie. Performances and movements are so naturalistic in this movie. There are long stretches where you kind of forget that you're watching an animated movie. Like, it's really kind of amazing, the way, like, the animation of this movie. And, you know, this movie is kind of about the singular struggle of David Thewlis' character to connect to other people, and it's sad, and the movie plays it in a very interesting way. It's a very melancholy movie. You know, this is an animated movie, but it's not for kids. This is a very R-rated, very kind of depressing animated movie. And, you know, the relationship that develops between Thewlis and Lee is amazing. The way they interact and talk to each other, their voices play a very important role in this movie, just like the fact that they have different voices. And when they're together, the movie really takes off. And it's also surprisingly one of Kaufman's more straightforward movies.
It doesn't circle in on itself?
No, it doesn't. And it's, you know, its central conceit is unique, like the actual concept of the movie, the plot, which I won't get into. And there is one sequence that is absolutely insane.
Okay.
But I think if like a normal, like non-film or art house geek audience gave it a chance, I think they'd find more to latch onto here than most of Kaufman's movies. You know, it's not like Synecdoche, New York, which is like just this like obtuse thing where you have to like kind of bend over backwards to try to make sense of it. And I love that movie, but you know, it's more like, I would say it's more like Being John Malkovich, which is like a movie that is pretty easy to follow. The concept is very unique in Being John Malkovich, but like this, it's a pretty straightforward plot wise movie. This movie, there's one absolutely insane scene, which is the Malkovich. You know, so I think, you know, I really like this movie. This is a really solid movie. I don't think it's one of Kaufman's best, but it is just really fascinating to watch and really worth checking out.
It sounds interesting and just bizarre. I don't know. But in a good way, like you said, in good ways.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a big Charlie Kaufman fan. I've seen all of his movies. And, he's awesome. And I was trying to see this movie for a while, but it wasn't playing anywhere near here because very few theaters will play a stop motion animated movie for adults, I guess.
Yeah, there you go.
That makes sense. As weird and obtuse as this one. It ended up playing in the theater near me as a double feature with Whiskey Tango Foxtrot.
So that's an experience.
Yeah, well, I didn't end up seeing Whiskey Tango Foxtrot. I just went to see Anomalisa. Although, I mean, I've heard mixed things about Whiskey Tango Foxtrot, you know. All right, so that is the end of our discussions. Let's move on to our featured review of Batman v Superman, Dawn of Justice.
Mr. Wayne.
Clark Kent, Daily Planet.
What's your position on the Bat Vigilante in Gotham? Civil liberties are being trampled on in your city. People living in fear. Thinks he's above the law.
The Daily Planet criticizing those who think they're above the law is a little hypocritical. Wouldn't you say? Considering every time your hero saves a cat out of a tree, you read a puff piece editorial about an alien. You could burn the whole place down.
Most of the world doesn't share your opinion, Mr. Wayne.
Maybe it's Gotham City and me. We just have a bad history with freaks dressed like clowns.
Boys! Bruce Wayne meets Clark Kent. I love it. I love bringing people together. How are we?
Lex.
Hi, hello. Lex, it is a pleasure. Ow! Wow, that is a good grip. You should not pick a fight with this person. You know the oldest lie in America, Senator? That power can be innocent.
You're gonna go to war. That son of a bitch brought the war to us. You know you can't win this. It's suicide.
The greatest gladiator match in the history of the world. Son of Krypton versus Bat of Gotham.
You're psychotic.
Is a three-syllable word for any thought too big for little minds.
All right, that was from the trailer for Batman v Superman, Dawn of Justice. It's directed by Zack Snyder, written by Chris Terrio and David Goyer. Terrio, who was the writer of Argo, was brought on once Ben Affleck was hired. Interesting tidbit. This movie stars Ben Affleck as Batman, Henry Cavill as Superman, Amy Adams, Jesse Eisenberg, Diane Lane, Lawrence Fishburne, Jeremy Irons, Holly Hunter, and Gal Gadot. The IMDb plot synopsis... And this is actually a very in-depth plot synopsis for IMDb, so...
I don't believe it.
Well, once you hear it. Fearing the actions of Superman are left unchecked, Batman takes on the Man of Steel, while the world wrestles with what kind of hero it really needs. With Batman and Superman fighting each other, a new threat, Doomsday, is created by Lex Luthor. It's up to Superman and Batman to set aside their differences, along with Wonder Woman, to stop Lex Luthor and Doomsday from destroying Metropolis.
What?
That was a lot more than IMDb usually gives us, right?
There's no way you're not on IMDb.
That was IMDb. That's definitely that is 100% IMDb. I will say that most of that plot synopsis is the last like 20 minutes of the movie,
right? Which is also the majority of the trailer,
so. Right? Which I think is part of the problem with this movie is that there's nothing happening, like. Like, as it ends, like, you kind of just realize, like, there wasn't much of a plot to that movie. Like, like nothing really happened for a majority of that runtime.
Yes.
But I'm gonna preface this review by saying that I love both Batman and Superman as characters. And there's nothing I want more.
Nice clarification.
Yeah. Not particularly in this movie. I love both Batman and Superman as characters. And there's nothing I want more than for this movie to be good.
Yes.
That said... I did not like Man of Steel.
Right.
You know, that movie has some good elements, but I think it's ultimately bogged down by some inept choices and what I think is a very fundamental misunderstanding of Superman as a character.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's a symbol of hope. He's supposed to be an ideal we can all strive towards as the best version of ourselves. I think Jor-El even says as much in the movie. Right. And instead, he's a brooding person who sees his powers as a burden, and then the movie ends with him basically destroying Metropolis.
Right. Which I get... in Man of Steel, because, like, it's the origin. I understand adding some, like, dark complex, because, like, why not make a sad movie? That's from someone I know of Superman.
I'm open to new interpretations of the character, right. You know, and I get that. Like, but it, I mean, in Man of Steel, like, the way it kind of plays out, it just kind of seemed like they were trying to capitalize on the success of Nolan's Batman.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they're doing what Nolan did in Batman, but with Superman, and I thought that didn't really work very well for me. But that's it. Man of Steel is a very divisive movie. A lot of fans do like it.
Okay.
I'm not one of those fans, but there are people who do enjoy Man of Steel. Now, have you seen Man of Steel, Mike?
You know, I have seen it once. I was going to watch it this weekend.
Okay.
And then I just said, I don't really care that much. And I just didn't watch it again.
Fair enough. I saw a bit of it this weekend because it was playing on FX. And there are really good elements of that movie. Like, there are elements of that movie that I like a lot. I think the opening prologue on Krypton, like the 15-minute Krypton scene, is a lot of fun. Like, it's really creative and interesting. And, like, you know, there's good stuff in that movie. And then there's stuff that I just hate. Like, with a passion. I mean, Jonathan Kent's whole character, the way he kind of behaves around Superman, and the way he kind of has him hide his powers for the greater good. Right. You know, there's a scene in that movie where he literally tells Superman that he should, like, child Superman, that he should have let a bunch of kids on a bus drown.
Right.
Rather than use his powers to save them, which is what he did. You know, and, you know, stuff like that. And then, of course, there's a scene where Jonathan Kent dies in a tornado for no reason. Like, zero sense being made there.
Yeah. Which they talk about. They reference sort of in Batman vs. Superman. He says, you know, it's the dream of a farmer from Kansas, this, like, what I'm supposed to be. Which is interesting, but then it doesn't do anything to challenge it in any way other than say that.
Yeah. And I think, you know, one of the things about Man of Steel is that it's really just a Superman movie. There's no groundwork being laid for any kind of outside characters, you know?
Right.
So there's, like, little Easter eggs here and there. Like, you see a LexCorp sign, you see a satellite that says Wayne Technologies. Yeah. But for the most part, it's just Superman. And I think that it's focused on Superman. I think that's good because this movie, I don't know if you can tell by our tone. Right. I mean,
we're kind of just ramping up to wait to spoilers, I think, to just be like, this scene was awful and this scene was awful.
Right. So I didn't talk to you about this before, but you're not a fan either, Mike?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah.
I just got out of this movie an hour ago and I just came out like grumpy. Just in like a bad mood. It was like, that was kind of a waste. I guess I'm going to get 8 more of these movies because people see bad movies and like, they're not even, I don't know.
Yeah. yeah. I was not a fan of Batman vs. Superman either. I think it's worse than Man of Steel. You know, because at least Man of Steel had like a focus and it had some decent ideas in there. Mm-hmm. This is a movie that's kind of just being torn apart in like 10 different directions.
Right.
And none of those directions are fully fleshed out or anything like that. You know, you've got Superman's story, right? Like, there's one side of this movie that's Superman's story. You've got one side of this movie that's Batman's story. You have one side of this movie that's Lex Luthor's nonsensical plot.
Right.
You've got one side that is Lois Lane's pointless side story. Mm-hmm. You've got one side that is set up for the Justice League. You've got just throwing Wonder Woman in there.
Right.
You know, this movie's like a mishmash of, like, nothing on top of, like, nothing.
Right. Yeah, I'm okay splitting this, you know, Batman and Superman stories. That makes sense. That's what this movie's about.
Sure.
But then putting all these other things in there to set up the saga of the DC movies that took Marvel 8 movies or whatever it was before we got to the Avengers to do perfectly and set up and hint at and, you know, make it exciting.
Yeah.
We get thrown into this 2.5-hour movie to just, we're going to start here type thing.
Yeah. And to be fair, I mean, Marvel, Marvel came out with Iron Man 2 pretty early in its run. And that's a movie that I'm not a big fan of. And that's a movie that has a lot of setup for like the Avengers, like coming out later. Cause you had like scenes with Nick Fury, you had scenes with Black Widow, but I think that's like, they get more to do in that movie than any of the Justice League members get in this movie.
Yes.
I mean, literally most of them are just like a very short cameo. Yeah. Are really terrible, like terrible cameos too, but we'll get to that in spoilers, I guess.
Yeah.
I don't think it's a spoiler.
Yeah, that's a spoiler thing. No, yeah. The specifics are spoilers.
Yeah, I don't think it's a spoiler to say that they're in the movie because that's pretty well publicized. But you know, the specifics of the cameo I'll say for spoilers, but yeah, they're terrible. And Wonder Woman, you know, was hyped up a lot before this movie. And I've seen a lot of reviews saying that she's great. I think she's fine.
Yeah.
But she's given virtually nothing to do.
I would agree with that. Movie. She is good. She's, you know, she does a great job with
I feel like I didn't get enough to kind of gauge whether Gal Gadot was a good Wonder Woman or not, you know.
For the 3 minutes of screen time and 10 lines of dialogue total, she
literally
gets,
10 lines.
She was good.
Yeah, like I'm sure her movie, like I'm still kind of stoked for her movie. I think her movie could be good and I feel like I'm really excited for the non-Zack Snyder DC movies.
Oh, Thank God.
You know, at least, like, later this year we're getting Suicide Squad with David Ayer, and that'll be something different, you know.
I want color in a Superman movie. Again, this is another grayscale Zack Snyder.
Yeah, this is, look, this movie's completely desaturated. The entire thing takes place at night.
Right.
And, you know, that works for Batman. Like, that,
I get
that's
it.
Fine for Batman. Superman, though, you know, he's a bright character. He's supposed to be a symbol of hope, you know. And that's the thing. I think that's part of the problem here, is that Superman and Batman are way too similar as characters in this interpretation of them.
Yes.
You know?
Wow. I didn't even think of that. But you're totally right.
Like, part of what makes the Batman versus Superman dichotomy work is that they are two completely different ideals. They are two completely different characters. Superman's supposed to be the symbol of hope. Batman is kind of like the seedy underground. Both of them are kind of working towards a common goal. And when they fight, you know, you should be able to feel the differences between those two characters. Like, there should be a fundamental difference between the two of them.
Yes.
And there's not that here. And I think the movie, sort of seems like there is at the beginning. But as the movie goes on, you realize there's not. I mean, so the beginning of this movie, the idea... Okay, so basically, the idea to react to fan reactions to that final Metropolis fight in Man of Steel, that's an interesting one. Because a lot of people at the end of Man of Steel, a lot of fans said, like, well, Superman just destroyed Metropolis.
Right.
You know, in his fight with General Zod, and didn't save anybody. Like, he, you know, basically destroyed the city with no regard for the innocent people that were dying.
Right.
And that was a big criticism of Man of Steel. And this movie kind of reacts to that. And I think that's an interesting idea. I think it backfires spectacularly. and it turns Superman into somebody that you actively root against right at the beginning of the movie. You know?
Yeah.
This is a, you know, Man of Steel didn't show you any casualties in his climax. So in a sense, you can kind of be like, well, it's kind of uncomfortable, but, like, I'm not seeing people dying.
Right.
This movie brings you down to Bruce Wayne's level, because Bruce Wayne was there during the final fight, and shows you that side, and it shows you where Wayne's hatred of Superman comes from, because you see people dying left and right during that fight.
But it also feels a very vain reaction to, he gets mad because Wayne Tower gets blown up.
Like, right, yeah, I mean, it's people he knows, which, sure.
It is people he knows, I get that, but, like, I don't know. It's just, it's weird. I don't Batman feels so unmotivated in this film.
Right.
Or unjustified.
Well, that's the problem. I mean, I don't think he's unjustified. I actually think that's, like, an interesting idea that, like, Superman destroyed the entire city, inadvertently killed possibly thousands, millions of civilians. Bruce Wayne should hate him. The world should hate him for what he did. And the movie positions it like that. And so this movie kind of sets you up to hate Superman right at the beginning.
And,
you know, for the thing is, like, after that, the movie asks you to just follow Superman's story as if he's a hero. You know, he's a tortured soul who's trying to save the world. But, like, you just gave us a huge reason to hate Superman and put us on Batman's side as if Batman is the hero of this movie. I think the problem with that is that Batman's cause in this movie is entirely hypocritical, because he is a sadistic, twisted asshole.
Right.
Who is straight up murdering people throughout the movie.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yes, I would agree with that.
Yeah, like, he's even, like, branding, like, part of the thing was that he's branding criminals with the bat symbol as they're getting sent to jail, which we're told is basically a death sentence in jail. Like, criminals will die when they're in jail with the bat symbol.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a very tonal mess for this film. I mean, you're right, Batman is justified, I guess. But we're not told whose side we're not supposed to root for. Batman, because he, like, tortures people, but, like, Superman also kills people. But, like, I don't know, Batman's cool, I guess, and, like, I don't know, Superman's a god. It's just kind of everywhere and all over the place, and it's pretty hard to follow. There's a lot of really jarring jumps back and forth. I mean, with dreams and stuff that, like, kind of just come out of nowhere.
Oh, yeah, no, I think this movie needed much more dream sequences. I didn't think there was enough.
And they don't even really explain anything.
No, a lot of them are dumb.
Go to them.
And I'm going to get to a couple of the dream sequences and spoilers, because there's some really weird ones. But, yeah, I'll talk about a couple of things I did like. I think Affleck as Batman is fine.
Yes.
Yeah. And I actually very much liked his chemistry with Jeremy Irons as Alfred. I thought they were pretty good together.
I like that we have sarcastic Alfred now, as opposed to Grandpa Alfred in Batman, in Nolan's.
I think you should rewatch Nolan's Batman. Alfred's pretty sarcastic in those movies.
He is, but I feel like Jeremy Irons is much more outwardly.
Sure. Yeah.
Giving him shit.
But I think, you know, if Affleck gets to direct and star in his own solo Batman movie, I'd be down.
I would watch the shit out of that.
Yeah, I think he could actually do it very well. And you know, one of the most divisive elements of this movie, Jesse Eisenberg. I personally liked him.
Yes.
You liked him too?
I do. I'm interested to hear what you have to say first.
I think he's the only major member of this cast who's having any kind of fun.
That's true. That's
you know,
true.
Like, along with Jeremy Irons and maybe Lawrence Fishburne. You know, Lex Luthor's plot is completely nonsensical. It doesn't make any sense. His motivation is never clear. You know, there's no reason for why he hates Superman other than the fact that he's Lex Luthor and he traditionally hates Superman.
Right.
You know, but Eisenberg is fun to watch when he's on screen, and that's enough. Like, when you have a movie that's unfun to watch as Batman vs. Superman, it's the weird thing. Like, I feel like I was never bored while watching it. I was kind of just, like, perplexed.
Yes, that's the phenomenal way to put it. I did see somebody tweet, it should be Batman vs. Superman Dawn of Daddy Issues, because all three main characters, or three men, male characters, have serious daddy issues. But I don't know much about the character of Lex Luthor, other than he hates Superman. But he also is a phenomenal Joker impersonator, I guess.
Yeah.
That's what he's doing.
Pretty much.
What Eisenberg is doing in this film.
Yeah, exactly. And then one other thing I did like about this movie, the score for this movie is largely unremarkable. Mm-hmm. With one exception, I thought Wonder Woman's theme, which has some intense drumming and some cool guitar twang, was pretty awesome. And this score is composed by Hans Zimmer and Junkie XL. Junkie XL was the composer of Mad Max Fury Road. And that definitely felt like an unused Fury Road track to me. Like, it felt like the kind of thing that Imogen and Joe would be, like, marching down to.
Yeah, that's very true. And there is even a very Mad Max-y dream sequence that was interesting, that I guess we'll get into.
Okay, yeah, I'm not sure which dream sequence you're talking about, but definitely get into that in spoilers. Other lousy thoughts? I didn't like Clark and Lois together in Man of Steel. I thought their relationship was completely accelerated, and I think Cavill and Amy Adams had no chemistry together. And also, Amy Adams is kind of wasted as Lois Lane in both movies. I think she's kind of a nothing role. And you know, she's kind of, in this movie specifically, she's little more than like a damsel in distress. She has to be saved by Superman on three separate occasions.
Yeah, she's literally used to lure as bait for Superman at one point.
Yeah, you know, Lois Lane should be a really strong character, like independent of Superman.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like I remember when she was cast in Man of Steel, like before the movie came out, I was like, oh yes, like Amy Adams is a great actress, like Lois Lane's gonna kick ass. And then Man of Steel came out and she was just kind of flat. I think she comes off better in Man of Steel than she does here, because literally most of this movie she's like off on the side doing like this investigation, investigating Lex Luthor's plot, which I didn't even know that's what she was doing, because like Lex Luthor's plot makes no sense. So it was like, you know, I barely even knew that Lex Luthor had a plot. Like, I was like, oh, she's just investigating a bullet or something. I don't know.
Right. Right. And even that scene I don't know. She's put, you know, being a badass investigative journalist, investigating like an African warlord, and like, she's, you know, putting herself in dangerous situation for the sake of the story. And then like, whoops, you're used as bait again. Like, and then that just keeps happening over and over again, and it's...
There is a specific aspect about that African scene that I want to talk about in spoilers, actually, because you might not know about it, because I didn't know about it until I read an article later. Really kind of pissed me off, actually. Okay. So we'll get to that in a minute or two. Basically, like, closing thoughts before we get into spoilers. I'm genuinely convinced Zack Snyder hates Superman as a character. which can be fine. I mean, like, J.J. Abrams wasn't a Star Trek fan. Right. Mm-hmm. Nolan wasn't really a Batman fan before he made those movies. You know, somebody who isn't a fan of the character or who openly despises the character could have an interesting perspective on the character. I don't think this movie has that. I think,
no,
you know, and so this movie is like, I don't know, man, like it's weird. I don't feel like I watched anything, you know, after I came out of the movie,
yes.
like, I didn't like the 2.5 hours didn't go slowly. Like they didn't drag or anything, which I was surprised about because it's like a 2.5 hour movie that I wasn't invested in. Like they didn't drag. I entered the movie and I left the movie and it felt like 2.5 hours had passed, like the exact right amount of time that I was told.
Right.
You know, but ultimately, like, it didn't feel like anything had actually happened.
Yes.
You know, I didn't feel like I had watched a Batman or Superman movie. Mm-hmm. Like, Batman came off okay. Superman, I don't feel like... it's been 2 Superman movies. I don't feel like I've watched Superman at all. You know?
Yeah, I agree. This, like I said, I came out kind of grumpy. I don't know how else to put it. I felt like I had looked at a series of images for 2.5 hours. Like, I don't know. Like, I kind of wasted my time, I feel like.
Yeah, I feel like it was kind of like the Transformers movies. Like, they were kind of movies that are just kind of nothing. Like,
right.
They're going to make a bunch of money.
Yeah, this is going to make a shitload of money.
Yeah. I'm going to be interested to see how it does from here. It got a huge opening weekend, like one of the biggest opening weekends ever.
Mm-hmm.
I think like biggest March opening of all time, something like that. But the reviews are terrible. Like it got like a 36 on Rotten Tomatoes, something like that. And fan reaction is not great either. Like I feel like most people are not big fans of this movie. And even the CinemaScore, which is a polling thing that... are you familiar with CinemaScore at all?
No, I'm not.
Okay, CinemaScore is like an online polling thing that basically gets audience reactions after a movie comes out.
Okay.
And almost every movie gets like an A. Like, it's really easy to please audiences, you know?
Yeah.
And so, like, it's in, like, usually the best movies get the lowest CinemaScores. Like, the most divisive movies get CinemaScores. So, like, The Witch has like a C- in CinemaScore, the kind of thing.
Right.
But superhero movies almost always get, like, really high marks. Like, every Marvel movie, I think, except for, like, Thor 2 has an A, and Thor 2 is, like, a B+.
Right.
Batman v Superman got a B- in CinemaScore, or a B on CinemaScore, which is actually terrible.
Yeah.
For cinema, like, that's, like, to put it in perspective, that's the same CinemaScore that, like, Green Lantern got.
Wow.
And the same CinemaScore that Elektra got, and Daredevil got, and, like...
Yeah.
So, like, audiences actually didn't like this movie that much. Like,
yeah. Oh, that reminds me now, I guess, that we talked about it. It's characters that have crossed the street universe as Ben Affleck, or actors. We were talking about Jay Simmons last time. You just mentioned Daredevil.
Yeah, Daredevil and Batman. Yeah, I can't believe we missed that.
That's how much we think about Daredevil. but yeah, I'm going to be interested. I doubt this is going to hamper the DC universe in any way, their films.
Right.
They're going to go full steam ahead with all the other movies.
Because
this is going to make money. It's going
to
happen.
Right. I'm curious to see if it will change how they approach their movies.
Right.
Maybe, like, you know, fan reaction was bad. And, you know, I mean, I'm more excited. Like, I think Suicide Squad could be, like, a breath of fresh air if it's played right. And, you know, they got Wonder Woman coming out next year. Justice League starts filming in a couple weeks. And Zack Snyder's still on board to direct. So, you know... We'll see what happens. And Zack Snyder has said that it's going to be a more fun movie than Batman v Superman. But we're going to get into Zack Snyder's idea of fun in a couple seconds in spoilers. Because I truly want to talk about this because it's just really weird.
Okay.
But yeah, so I think we should just get into spoilers right now.
Yeah.
All right. So obviously, not a fan.
Not so much, no.
Yeah, I was not a fan either. All right, let's get into spoilers for Batman v Superman starting right now. All right, spoilers for Batman v Superman starting right now. So here's the thing I wanted to talk about. That opening, scene early on at the beginning of the movie with Africa, the African subplot, the murder subplot.
Right. Yes.
So Lois Lane is kind of held hostage by these like African emissaries or whoever they are. I don't really know.
Yeah.
And she has a photographer with her.
Right.
Right, who's like kind of posing as a photographer of a story. It turns out to be like a CIA operative.
Right.
He has like one line and then he's immediately shot and killed by one of the African dudes or like one of the military guys.
Yeah.
That photographer is credited. The actor who plays that photographer is credited in the movie in the credits as Jimmy Olsen.
What?
Yeah. Jimmy Olsen, Superman's pal, the guy who works like who in the comics works in the Daily Planet. You know, he's one of it's like Superman's number two guy. Yeah, he is, like, I guess there might have been more to this character in the extended cut that's coming out on Blu-ray, the three-hour cut.
Right.
Which, God bless you if you want to watch the three-hour cut of Batman.
I'm interested to just know what that was, what that could have been, what that, yeah, the R-rated director's cut.
Yeah, but, you know, so that character was supposed to be Jimmy Olsen, you know, one of the most lighthearted and fun characters in the entire DC universe.
Right.
And Zack Snyder just kills him off immediately. Like, he introduced him in the movie just to kill him off. And somebody interviewed Zack Snyder about it, and mm-hmm. he said, oh, yeah, well, we didn't really have a place for Jimmy Olsen in the movie, but we thought it might... But we thought, you know, we wanted to include the character, and we thought, we just wanted to include the character in a fun way.
In a fun way?
Exact words. Having a bit of fun with the character is what he said. Exact words.
So that's interesting so on Zack a lot of levels.
So Zack Snyder's idea of fun...
is execution.
Is executing a beloved DC Comics character point blank.
Yeah.
Immediately after he's introduced.
It's so weird because, one, we don't ever have a name for that person in the film.
Right, he's just a guy.
Yeah, like, so, why name him?
Like, you don't have to name him Jimmy Olsen.
Exactly.
You might want Jimmy Olsen later. Like, you don't know.
Yeah, you could name him Timmy Bolson or whatever. Like, the credit could be anything other than Jimmy Olsen.
What's really weird is that the other lady who works at the Daily Planet, the one who talks to Lois every once in a while.
Right.
She was in Man of Steel. And her character in Man of Steel was named Jenny Olsen. And...
You're like, that's a nice reference.
Like, yeah, and that was kind of like the idea. It was like, oh, yeah, Jimmy Olsen's in the movie, but like, it's a girl and her name's Jenny. I'm like, oh, that's interesting. That's kind of fun. Yeah. She didn't do anything in Man of Steel, but she was kind of just there. And they don't actually say that her name is Jenny Olsen in the movie. So they kind of just changed it to just Jenny something else now. And now they just killed off Jimmy Olsen for no reason. And I think that's like... kind of emblematic of the problems with this movie is that it has no, like, I don't want to say it has, like, I don't want to say that, like, something has to have respect for the source material in order to be good.
Right.
You know? But this has no respect for the source material, and I feel like it hurts the movie in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Other spoilery things about this movie, so Holly Hunter plays Senator Finch,
mm-hmm.
who's a senator who questions Superman's role and his powers and his godlike status. There's a lot of Jesus imagery in this movie, also, even more so than Man of Steel, which had a lot. Okay. And that one had even more so than Superman Returns, which had a lot. like, Superman's basically been a Jesus figure for most of his movies. And so there's a scene about halfway through the movie where Superman attends a Senate hearing in which the building blows up and kills everybody in the building. And it's, first of all, kind of weird because it involves a jar of piss.
Yeah.
Which is a callback to a discussion that she had with Lex Luthor earlier in the movie. But it's very odd. Like, it's just weird that that even happens. Like, it's weird that, like, I'm saying that is a thing, like a plot point in this movie. Like, a jar of piss is, like, her sign that Lex Luthor was
right
here. And then the building explodes, and Superman just stands there.
Right.
Like, the entire building is exploding around him. And then it cuts back to Superman, and he's just standing there, like, engulfed in flame. Like, the entire building is engulfed in flame around him. And it's like, you're goddamn Superman! Like, do something! Look for survivors! Like, do anything! You're just standing there!
Right.
Like, there's pandemonium outside the building. I'm sure people are probably hurt from the explosion, like, the debris and stuff outside. Go save somebody! Show them that you're not an asshole!
Right. I feel like this is kind of a treatise on Zack Snyder's opinion of humanity. Of like, no, we're all just dicks. Like, that's it. Nothing that can be done about it. Even the alien that comes to save us is a dick. Like,
right.
I don't know. I feel like the stuff that Superman goes through in this film, he would have just left. Like, he wouldn't put up with all this.
Yeah, he doesn't seem to care about anybody on Earth, except for his mom and Lois.
Yeah.
The only two people he cares about. And I'll talk about his mom in a minute. I did want to talk about Lex Luthor's plot, which we've referenced before makes absolutely no sense. And I took a couple excerpts from some reviews of the movie that I thought were like pretty interesting and like pretty funny. John Golson, who's a critic I follow, posted this in Letterboxd, like his full review. Okay, so if the film starts with Bruce Wayne's bad day, establishing that Superman's godlike powers are dangerous if left unchecked, then what's the African murder subplot for?
Right.
As best I can tell, it's to give Lois Lane something to do. You know, Lex Luthor doesn't have to make this point to the world about Superman by framing him. One of our lead protagonists already believes it.
Yeah.
Other characters in the film are already acting on it, like Holly Hunter and Scoot McNairy.
Mm-hmm.
And why would Lex frame him using bullets? You know, because since when does Superman shoot people? And yep. why use special bullets that point back to Lex Luthor instead of regular bullets that could have been purchased anywhere?
Yeah, it doesn't... I don't know.
Yeah, like, none of that makes sense. And no. also, like, you don't even know why he's doing this. Like, why is Lex Luthor, like, doing this plot? Like, why does he hate Superman? Is he getting some kind of money kickback or something? Like, I don't know. Nobody knows.
Yeah. I think it's because he's got a god complex, but, like, he does, I don't know. It's very odd. There is the scene at the library function or whatever the hell that is. That doesn't make any sense. He says, you know, knowledge is power, but someone with all the knowledge and no power is a paradox, and he's all angry and flustered and stuff because he's so weak himself, but he's super smart, so he wants to kill Superman, I guess?
Yeah.
Is his the motivation, question mark? Like, I don't know.
I don't know, but his plot continues. Lex Luthor creates Doomsday out of General Zod's dead body.
Right.
His reasons for doing so are never clear. It seems like he just wants to destroy everything, I guess?
Right. Classic supervillain.
Yeah, and then he kidnaps Superman's mom, Martha Kent, in order to get Superman to fight Batman. Right. Don't know why he wants Superman to fight Batman. That's never clear.
I think because Batman stole the kryptonite, because he leaves the Batarang in the kryptonite thing. But like
Lex Luthor also had kryptonite?
Well, he stole it from Lex Luthor.
Okay. Even but, so...
Yeah, it doesn't like, really make sense.
It doesn't really add up, and... You know, one of the other reviews I have, this is from The Guardian, who posted an article saying, like, everything wrong with Batman versus Superman.
Okay.
Or something along those lines. And this is a paragraph from that. I haven't even mentioned Wonder Woman, a.k.a. Diana Prince, warrior princess of Themyscira. Wonder Woman periodically shows up at parties to annoy Bruce Wayne. she steals some computer files from Lex Luthor during a fundraiser for a library or something. And then... Bruce and Diana meet at a totally different party where they stare at a dagger in a glass case. You may have wondered whose party that was, why either of the characters were at that party, and what the point of the knife in the box was. Look, cool people get invited to parties all the time that you don't know about. You should be used to this by now. Stop asking. It makes you look desperate.
Yeah, that's pretty accurate.
Yeah. But, yeah, Wonder Woman's role in this movie, I mean, she has, like, a couple of scenes in parties and stuff. She flirts with Bruce Wayne a little bit. And then at a certain point, Bruce Wayne finds Lex Luthor's file on her, discovers that she's, like, an immortal Amazonian princess, is totally cool with it. And then, like, totally is like, oh, all right. And, you know, sends her the file. And then she looks at – she her role in this movie is to look at other people on the Justice League, basically.
Yeah, yeah.
And then she has, like – joins the final fight at the end.
Right.
And during her final fight, like, she's cool. She has, like, her lasso, and she has the sword and shield and everything. And, like, it's cool.
Cool stuff.
But it's not enough. It's definitely not enough. I feel like this movie would have benefited a lot from just, like, making Wonder Woman a central part of the movie instead of just kind of adding her in.
Right. Yeah. I do want to talk about, before, I don't know if you want to get into the Justice League stuff now, or you have other things to
talk about. We can talk about the Justice League stuff.
Okay, well, I did find it interesting that so they find that the photo, you know, Batman decrypts the data.
Right, and I think it's a set photo from the Wonder Woman movie.
I wouldn't be surprised.
I'm pretty sure actually Chris Pine's in the photo.
That's what I was going to bring up. Chris Pine standing next to her in the photo. Like, why I haven't? That's interesting. I guess I don't know much about Wonder Woman's story. You know, her origin story in general, so I don't know what it's going to be, but that was kind of cool. I was like, oh, it's Chris Pine, I guess.
Chris Pine, yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, all of the Justice League setup felt, like, very awkwardly shoehorned into me. I mean, because literally it's just, like, the movie stops dead for a few minutes while Wonder Woman just, like, watches, like, each different member of the Justice League on a computer.
Yeah, well, I thought it was interesting. It starts off kind of, I was okay with it for a second, you know, for a little bit, because we see Bruce Wayne look at Wonder Woman's file, and it's kind of like that photo, grainy photo from 1918, and like some shaky footage, and it's like kind of pieced together, and they're not certain.
And like it's informing a character who's actually in this movie.
Right, that too. That's a very good point. So then we look at the other Justice League members, and one, the files are just photos of their logos. Like, they are, that already exists in this universe.
Well, I guess Lex Luthor must have created them.
Yes.
Because he's really good at branding, you know?
I guess so, yeah. So, and then we look at the Flash one, and that one is also the same similar type thing. It's some security camera footage and like some shaky cam, you know, type stuff. And it's interesting that the like these people are hidden; they don't know who they are. Right. And then we get Aquaman, and he's just like looking at the camera for 10 seconds, and it's like
right,
not even like
up.
Yeah, and it's not like there could be whispers of what this might be. We're not sure. It's like, nope, just like high def footage of Jason Momoa with flowy hair. And then he takes off.
Yeah, like, also obviously holding his breath, which I thought was hilarious.
I didn't even realize. Yeah. The cyborg one, I understand, because like that's the science, what it's going on. So like why it would be.
Right, but it was kind of like horrifying and like, yeah, kind of like, and really out of nowhere. And, yeah, you know, really like. I feel like Aquaman and the Flash are characters that everybody kind of knows, and so you see them, and they're like, all right, cool. Like, Aquaman and the Flash, like, I get it. But then
they're doing their thing. Yeah.
Cyborg's a fairly obscure character. Like, I feel like if you pointed to a random person on the street and said, name the members of the Justice League, Cyborg would not be on that list.
Ever. Unless they were a fan of Teen Titans.
Unless they were a fan of Teen Titans. But then, you could say name the members of Teen Titans, and that would make sense. That's Cyborg. But, like, this is not the Cyborg who was on Teen Titans.
No, definitely not.
Much darker version of Cyborg.
Yeah.
This isn't the Cyborg who is, making jokes and cracking wise, I don't think. We don't know, because we get, like, a 30-second glimpse of him screaming, and that's it.
Yeah, as a quarter of a corpse. With the spinal column hanging out at the bottom of it.
Yeah.
Gross.
But anyway, so, and moving on from that, the actual fight between Batman and Superman? 5 minutes. Like, this movie is called Batman versus Superman. Like, that is the title of the movie. Mm-hmm. Everything's building up to that fight. You know, we're at a point where we're treating both Batman and Superman like villains.
Yeah.
At this point.
Absolutely.
We should absolutely have this crazy knockout, drag down fight between the two of them.
Yeah.
5 minutes at most. Yep. And Superman doesn't even want to fight Batman.
It's mostly guys getting thrown through walls.
Mostly, yeah. The fight itself, I guess, is kind of cool, but like.
Yeah, there was only one really cool moment that I liked a lot where. So, you know, Batman weaponizes kryptonite into some gas form or something, and he's, like, shooting gas grenades at him.
Mm-hmm.
And he's punching Superman, and Superman's face is, like, he's, like, getting beat up, and you can see, like, his head, he's moving with each punch. And then, like, the kryptonite wears off, and he just, like, turns his head and faces him as Batman is, like, wailing on him, and he has stopped reacting.
Right.
That moment was kind of cool, because Batman... as far as I understand, would have no chance.
Well, that's part of why I think Zack Snyder really hates Superman, is because, generally speaking, Superman should easily kick the crap out of Batman. Like,
yeah.
And I'm saying that as a huge fan of both characters, and I know there's that big debate, like, oh, but Batman could use his weapons and gadgets and stuff, and I guess Zack Snyder falls on that side of the debate. Because Batman would have beaten Superman in that scene, if not for Superman mentioning that his mom's name is Martha, which happens to be Batman's mom's name.
Right.
You know, what a small world.
Yeah. Basically what happens is Batman goes, dude, our moms have the same name. Did we just become best friends? And Superman goes, yep.
Do you want to go do karate in the garage?
Pretty much. That's what happens. Which I have to give all credit. My friend Colin came up with that joke. So
nice.
Good job, Colin. But that's what happens. He says Martha, and he's like, wait a second. And we have another Zack Snyder's dream sequence.
Yeah. Yeah. There are a ton of dream sequences in this movie, all of which are nonsensical and terrible. Mm-hmm. The movie opens with Batman's parents dying in a dream sequence and like young Bruce Wayne kind of being lifted up by the bats.
Which was so weird, because it starts off as like, yeah, traditional, okay, I get it, we have to, I guess, set up Batman. No indication it's a dream sequence.
Yep.
Yeah, then he starts flying.
Yeah, somebody on Twitter referenced this movie, and it's like, Zack Snyder kind of has this defeatist attitude throughout this movie, and like somebody tweeted, like, the line from Batman Begins, Thomas Wayne has a line, like, Bruce, why do we fall? And Nolan's Batman's like, so we can get back up again. And Snyder is like, stay down.
Wow. Yeah. Holy crap. That's pretty much exactly what happens.
I think that's exactly the dichotomy of this movie.
That is the line in the movie.
Their entire fight ends because Batman discovers Superman's mom has the same name as Batman's mom.
Yeah.
And that's like this big cathartic moment in the movie, I guess. But it feels very empty, and it's just super dumb. Like, I feel like I get the idea behind it. Like, the idea is that Batman has this realization that Superman has a mother.
Right.
And it is this, like, it kind of humanizes Superman in this way.
Right.
But, I mean...
And Batman gets a chance to save Martha in some symbolic way.
Yeah. Like,
but, I don't know.
It doesn't work. It doesn't work. Like, yeah, Superman and Batman have the same mom. Like, I guess, like, early comics in the 1940s didn't have enough names to go around. I don't know. Like, that's... you know, it doesn't really work. Plus, I mean, it comes off as very clunky because Superman is like, I have to save Martha. Like,
my wife I said hello.
As if he wouldn't just call her mom.
Yeah.
You know?
That's a good point.
Like, it's weird. And, like, you know, he says that and Batman's like, oh, who's Martha? And of course, Lois Lane is there in the nick of time. Like, oh, Martha's his mom. And he's like, oh. Yeah.
And he has the I'm having a flashback face that happens in movies.
Exactly. Yeah. And then let's talk about a couple of other dream sequences. There's this the scene early on where Batman gets, like, captured by Superman. Like, the dream sequence where Batman's captured by Superman and then, like, kind of breaks free and kills a bunch of Superman's dudes.
Yeah.
Right? That was the one sequence. And that's before you actually see Batman kill people in the movie. And you just see, like, this dream sequence. I mean, it's implied that Batman has killed people in the past in the movie. But you don't actually see it on screen.
You don't see it happen, yeah.
You see this dream sequence, and you don't know it's a dream sequence at first. I mean, it kind of plays as if it is one. But, like, there's no evidence to suggest it is one. Like, it seems
is this
like...
In the desert? Are we talking...
In the desert, yeah.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
In the desert. And so, like, Batman kind of breaks free and just kills, like, 50 of these, like, militaristic dudes that have, like, the Superman logo on their shoulders.
Yeah.
And he's, like, shooting them, and he breaks a dude's neck, and it's this whole thing, and it's... To be fair, it's a pretty well-directed action sequence. A lot of it's done in one take.
Yeah.
And it's kind of neat to watch. But at the same time, Batman's killing a lot of people, and I'm not, like, on board with that.
I agree. I feel a little differently about it. I felt it was pretty obviously a nightmare once it was happening, because that's the Mad Max thing. He comes out of a desert thing. There's towers of fire, and, like, Metropolis is a skeleton. Like, it's just burnt-out city.
Once, like, it was clearly a nightmare, but, like...
But still, it feels
at the same time, he's starting to kill people, and like that's going on in his head. Like that's Batman's psyche. He's like, he's just killing down motherfuckers.
Yeah.
And then later on in the movie, he's killing down motherfuckers. Like it's
he does kill a lot of people.
Like in not in a dream sequence, in real life. Like
yeah, I felt because you're right. The dream sequence happens much earlier than all that in the actual film. So I was like, okay, it's, you know, a nightmare. It's the worst version of himself, maybe. He's afraid this is what could happen.
That was kind of my thought process as that was happening, too. Like, you know, I can sort of get by it because it's a dream sequence. But then later on, he's actually killing people.
But then he does kill people. That is one of the most jarring dream sequences because it's not him, you know, a lot of times it's somebody drinking and then, like, you know, he slumps over, passes out, we get a dream sequence. It's him sitting at a computer to decode info.
Yeah.
And then, boom, we're smack dab in this nightmare.
Right.
Which doesn't make any sense.
And then, but then that nightmare, like, he wakes up from it, but it turns out he didn't actually wake up because it's a second dream sequence.
He incepts himself.
And it's this weird, weird, like, nonsensical thing where somebody who appears to be the Flash, I'm pretty sure it's the Flash who's talking to him.
That might make a lot of sense, but I didn't know that.
Yeah, I mean, I only knew that because that kind of stuff has happened on the Flash TV show.
Right.
And so it would kind of make sense for that to be the Flash, although the movie doesn't make it clear. Like, if you didn't even know that the Flash was a character, like if you had no knowledge of the Flash as a person, that would make no sense. And it made no sense to me as somebody who knows the Flash as a person. So
it still makes no sense.
So I can't imagine what it would be like. But it's like this whole thing where like the Flash comes back from the future to warn Batman about how Superman has turned evil or something like that.
Right.
And, you know, it's this really nonsensical sequence that, and look, you haven't even seen the video footage of the Flash yet. Like, it's just...
Oh, not even close. Yeah.
So, like Ben Affleck should have no idea who the Flash is. Why is he having this dream sequence?
With him.
About the Flash. Like...
Yeah, it's very odd. I couldn't tell if that actually happened. Because, well, I was just reading on Reddit when I got home earlier that people feel this relies too much on audience prior knowledge of the thing, because in that dream sequence in the desert, there's a giant Omega symbol in the desert, which is a reference to something that I don't remember, okay. But people were talking about that. No one knew what that was in their theater because they, you know, it's like a deep, deep reference for the Justice League. Yeah. But then he wakes up and there's like this person saying, I'm too early. You have to stop him or whatever. And then she wakes up again. And like in the background, you still see all the papers flying around of when this wormhole thing opened, when he actually wakes up. So it's like, what? I don't understand what the hell is going on. What does that mean? That's a setup to stuff that we don't know yet.
Yeah, no, it was a whole bunch of nonsense. And yeah, it's more Justice League setup, which is completely pointless. During the final fight with Doomsday, I did want to talk about this. Mm-hmm. There's a whole sequence where Batman decides to bring Doomsday to Gotham.
Right.
During the film's climax. Which makes no sense to me, because he just got mad at Superman for doing that in Man of Steel to Metropolis.
Yeah. Yep.
Like, all the 2 hours leading up to this, is like, you destroyed Metropolis, you have to pay for your actions. I'm going to take Doomsday to Gotham.
Right. It's also really weird, because he needs to get the spear, right? You know, the kryptonite spear.
Yeah.
But he's in a fighter jet? And, like, could go to Gotham and get the spear and come back?
Yep.
Also, Metropolis and Gotham are across a river from each other, apparently.
Yeah, didn't know that.
That's a thing.
That is a thing, I guess. Yeah, so that was odd. And the whole Doomsday thing was just such, like it was very blatantly just something, like, it just existed to give Batman and Superman something to team up against at the end of the movie.
Yeah,
you know, just to give them something to punch.
Yeah, that was all.
But then I think the big surprise in this movie... and I did want to tell you, this is pretty crazy. This movie does the Death of Superman story in its climax, which I did not expect at all. I don't think anybody saw that coming. You know, so Superman sacrifices himself to save Doomsday, or to kill Doomsday, sorry.
He's not that evil.
Superman sacrifices himself to kill Doomsday by using the kryptonite spear to destroy him, even though the kryptonite will kill Superman himself. Never mind that Wonder Woman... is standing right there, probably could have taken the kryptonite spear herself.
Yeah, has him lassoed.
Yeah. And, you know, so Supes didn't have to die. Wonder Woman could have done it, but, you know, pathos.
We can't let her have any moment.
Exactly. And I might have given this movie credit if it had really committed to Superman's death. And I think it does for a little while.
Yeah, right? But come on.
Of course, he has to return for Justice League.
So yeah, as soon as it happened.
The final shot implies that he's alive. Right. Right. So, like, the final shot of the movie, like, Superman dies. It's this big dramatic moment. You have this, like, thing. You have, like, the hero's funeral in Washington, D.C. Right. And I think it's, if Superman had actually died in this movie, I think I might like this movie a lot more. Just because, like, I have not been a fan of this version of the character, but right. It would have been an interesting, like, redemptive arc.
Yeah. It would have been a really bold choice and a commitment to Superman wanting to be good in the end.
And I still think the movie would have been heavily flawed, but, you know, if they had committed to it and maybe not even included Superman in Justice League, or like made his resurrection a plot point in Justice League, like towards the end of that movie or something.
Right.
I think that could have been really interesting.
You could have said they would have done Superman justice.
You son of a bitch.
Yes.
But of course the movie has to, the final shot implies that he's alive. I mean, it shows his coffin, and it shows, like, you hear a heartbeat, and you see, like, dirt from the coffin kind of rising up.
Yeah.
Which, of course, like, he's Jesus, so he has to come back from the dead.
Has to come back.
And it makes me wonder, like, is Justice League going to be like Pirates of the Caribbean 3, where the first half hour is getting Superman back to life? Yeah. You remember how Jack Sparrow died at the end of Pirates of the Caribbean 2?
He's dead, yeah.
And, like, the first half hour of the next one is just them, like, going to get Jack Sparrow back.
Yeah, and he's, like, trapped on the island or something.
And then the movie can start.
Right. Yeah, it'll be... I mean, and that movie... I mean, not Pirates of the Caribbean 3, no. That scene at the end, you know, with the funerals and the dual funerals going on and all that stuff... was interesting. Like, you know, Wonder Woman has that line, they didn't know how to treat him other than a soldier, because they give him the full military burial in Washington, and like all the interesting stuff. But like, it's just so out of place with the rest of this movie.
Yeah. So, I mean, but I, I give it credit. I was genuinely surprised they went for the Superman killing himself thing.
Yeah. It's weird how they follow it up with, they follow nuclear Superman surviving, like being hit by a nuclear missile, with him dying from Doomsday.
Well, I mean, Supes can survive a nuclear missile. He can't survive kryptonite. That's,
yeah, but he gets, oh yeah, you're right. Okay,
like it's a kryptonite spear. That's the reason he dies, is because he's next to the kryptonite and gets stabbed by Doomsday.
And gets stabbed. You're right. Okay, that's fair.
But even that whole thing, like Lois, like who throws the spear into the water? It's Lois, right?
Lois, yeah, she drops it in the water. Yeah,
she like throws it into the water, doesn't she?
Well, whatever. Yeah,
like to try to get it away from Doomsday or something. She throws it into the water and then has to go back and get it. Like,
yeah. Well, it happens after Batman and Superman have their like, we just become best friends moment, and they leave, and then Lois picks up the spear and drops it in the water, and then Doomsday comes and they need
right.
the spear.
That's what it is, because of course. And so, yeah. And so Lois tries to get it, and then almost drowns. Third time she has to be saved in the movie.
Yep, saved by Superman. So she can't do anything on her own.
So Superman has to save her, and then he has to get the spear, and then, yeah, it's this whole thing, and yeah, nothing in this movie works, I don't think. I mean, I did mention a couple things I did like, Ben Affleck, Jesse Eisenberg, but, right. You know, for the most part, most things in this movie don't work, and even the Henry Cavill, I think, is very flat in the role of Superman. You know, and I think he can do good with the part if he was given better material. So remember when we saw him in The Man from U.N.C.L.E.? He was great in that movie.
He was phenomenal.
Super charismatic in that movie. He was like a better Superman in that movie than he was in the Superman movies.
You're pretty right. Yeah, it's interesting. Like I feel like there is a version of the brooding Superman that could be good. I don't know what it would entail, but it's not this one. And no. I don't know.
Yeah, but luckily there are other interpretations of Superman for us to enjoy. Superman Returns still exists, which I think is a very underrated movie. Yeah. And, you know, the Christopher Reeve Superman movies are still there, Superman 1 and 2. Right. So there's that. And plus, you know, there's better Batman movies out there, too. There's Nolan's Batman movies, there's Burton's Batman movies, the Adam West Batman movie.
I'm worried or interested, you know, the quote-unquote more fun version of this. Superman's experienced death now, like... you're going to tell me he won't brood over that? Like, he came back from the dead. What is that? What is that going to do to his character? Yeah. Normally, that makes a person darker.
You think it'll be like Buffy the Vampire Slayer season 6, where Buffy comes back from the dead, and it's the entire thing is just her being depressed?
Yeah, like...
about having been dead.
Right. Like, I don't know what...
Oh, man. So, yeah, I mean, Justice League... Like, are you on board? Like, are you interested? Like, where are you standing with Justice League right now?
I think I stand with Justice League the same place I stood on this film 2 days ago, or before the reviews, really, I guess, started coming in. Where, like, sure, I'm interested, I guess. They're going to happen, so I'll be seeing them, probably.
Yeah.
My expectations will be as low as possible. Somehow this film didn't meet them.
Right.
So what I, and like you said, I want these are things that I am excited about and I want to be good. This could be really cool. So I want them to be really awesome and fun and popcorn movies. I don't know. I saw somebody lamenting the fact that they were going to have the discussion that the movie of Batman fighting Superman wasn't for their kids, like to their kids. Like, no, you can't see this, really.
Yeah, there's no non-dumb way to say that to a six-year-old. That the movie with Batman fighting Superman is not for kids.
It's not for kids. Yeah, exactly. So that's said something, I guess. I don't know. What I feel like the rest of these movies are going to be like, unless there's a complete shift in their approach and their tone.
I mean,
which could happen. Like,
I hope
could
that's the case. I think Wonder Woman has potential. It's going to be like that movie's going to take place in like World War I, which could be interesting. Right. And you know, James Wan has said that his Aquaman movie is going to be a lot more fun. I trust James Wan.
That happening.
I trust James Wan a lot more than I trust Zack Snyder on his definition of fun.
yes. Yeah. Yeah. You know, and, I have a lot of faith in him.
And like
that.
The Flash is happening, and like the Flash. I mean, first of all, the Flash TV show. I'll plug again. One of the best shows on TV right now. Super lighthearted and fun. It's like the epitome of what everything DC Comics should strive for.
Right. Interesting choice to not use that. I don't know why they didn't
But even so, I mean, like, the Flash movie could take some cues from the show. Like, you never know.
Right, that's true.
But, yeah, in any case, sounds like neither of us were fans of Batman v Superman. Yeah. I think it's one of our best discussions that we've had thus far. That was a really good one.
We did a pretty good job, Mike.
Yeah, let's pat ourselves on the back.
Yep.
And at least, you know, we got Captain America Civil War to look forward to, which will probably be really good.
Oh, my God.
And I don't want, like, it's, like, people make this out to be, like, a Marvel versus DC thing, like, we only like Marvel movies and you don't like DC movies, or you only like DC movies and you don't like Marvel movies. Right. But that's not the case at all. Like, I love characters from both sides. I am more of a Marvel fan, but I love characters from both sides. And I want all the movies to be good.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
I want every movie I ever want ever see to be good, or at least be trying to be good.
Right. Just on a philosophical level.
Yeah. But, you know, Marvel has just been doing a great job with their movies. And, like, the reason people are praising their movies and, like, bashing DC's is because Marvel's movies are generally better.
Yeah.
Like, they've really locked into a formula, and that formula can be, like,
formulaic.
Yeah, thanks, Mike. But it kind of hits the same beats a lot, and so there are, like, there's definitely stuff to criticize and complain about, and, like, Marvel's movies aren't perfect, but they generally are fun and are sometimes great. Like, they're, like, yeah. I thought Age of Ultron was fantastic. I thought Winter Soldier was, like, one of the best movies of that year. Yeah. You know, and so I'm excited for Captain America Civil War, and I think that movie will at least be good.
Yeah, it'll hit the baseline of being good.
Yeah, like, just everything about that movie is, like, you know, Anthony and Joe Russo are coming back, who directed Winter Soldier, and, like, you've got them building to this conflict. It's a versus movie too. It's Captain America versus Tony Stark, and it's splitting the entire universe into, like, two halves, like, whose side are you on, kind of thing. And I think that's, like, they're basing that on, you know, several movies worth of character development, and, like, you've seen these characters interact with each other. So you have, and, like, the way Steve Rogers and Tony Stark are portrayed in both those movies are in their various film franchises are really different. And so you'll have, like, two clashing ideologies really taking place in that movie, which I don't think you have in this movie, which is what I was saying before. Like, Batman and Superman are way too similar as characters.
Yeah, I agree with all of that. I think this is them, DC, trying to catch up to Marvel and doing, you know, phase one in one movie.
Pretty much.
And it doesn't really work.
No, it does not. But you know what? Suicide Squad's still on the table. I have hope in Suicide Squad. I feel like, even if I'm not totally sold in the trailers, I feel like it just has, like, a much more unique feel and tone to it than, you know, I feel like that's the movie that really could do something really good if it goes for it. So
yeah, I haven't seen the trailers for that, but I
really just, you didn't see one before Batman vs Superman?
No,
really?
Yeah.
Oh man.
Weird. I know.
That's very odd.
So I'm interested, and I kind of, you know, I have, it's similar, just because I don't know anything about, I haven't seen anything about it. I'm going in with, you know, low expectations because it's this type of movie.
Because now it's DC, and now
it's DC.
Now they've got the reputation.
Yeah. But I almost hope that, or wish, or whatever, they just kind of do it as its own thing. That would be really cool, I think. That idea of, like, this is a Suicide Squad franchise. We don't need them to be part of Batman and Superman and Justice League and all that stuff, which I don't know. Maybe they will be. I don't know what's going to happen. But yeah,
feel like it would be more like a Guardians of the Galaxy-esque thing where, like, you know, they're kind of on their own, like, doing their own thing while the rest of the universe is, like, messing around doing stuff. Yeah. Although if Suicide Squad really, like, gets a huge reaction, I could see them, like, just working in a Joker or something to to Justice League.
But yeah, well, because, I mean, it features Joker and Harley Quinn and, like...
Like major DC characters.
Major DC characters that are going to have to be in part of the other stuff.
Yeah. So, although I think the Joker reference in this movie was pretty solid. Where Ben Affleck's like, oh, yeah, well, I'm from Gotham. We have a bad history with people dressed up as clowns.
Right. And he walks past the suit in his Batcave that has, like, ha ha ha, jokes on you, Batman.
Right. The Robin suit. It's Robin's suit.
Oh, was it? I didn't even notice that.
Yeah, it had the R. Yeah,
so that, because the whole thing is black latex, so, like,
right, because these characters are dark and brooding.
Grimdark. Yeah, so we could just wrap up. I think we've
made our point. Yeah. So yeah, not fans of Batman vs Superman, but, you know, I have hope for the rest of the DC universe. I mean, Like, I love previous Superman movies, and I love Nolan's Batman. I think those three movies are pretty fantastic.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I... Like, they had such a... I'm sorry, I gotta keep going. They had such a good thing going with Nolan, and they could have, like, kept it going as, like, this very filmmaker-driven franchise, like these DC movies that... And I feel like they still kind of are. Like, these movies are very much Zack Snyder's, I think. Yeah. And I've said that Man of Steel wasn't really, like, it felt more like David Goyer's to me. Mm-hmm. But after watching this movie, I feel like it was more Zack Snyder than I gave it credit for. And, like, just reading a lot of his interviews and, like, his philosophies about these characters, like, I feel like, you know, these are very heavily Zack Snyder influenced. And I hope, you know, other filmmakers more talented, because I actually have liked a lot of Zack Snyder's work in the past. I really like Watchmen. I thought that was a really good movie. And, you know, I'm one of the few who enjoyed Sucker Punch, you know, that kind of thing.
Right. He's got a very specific style, though.
Yeah, and I think that's pretty interesting. And, like, his style is on display here in Batman v Superman, and it's somewhat interesting to watch. It has some cool shots that are happening. There's one shot during the final fight with Doomsday of Batman that is, like, it could, to me, be, like, an iconic shot of Batman when he has the grappling hook and he just, like, kind of gets up on the corner side of the building. Like, it looks cool. It looks like Batman, you know?
Right. But we only get it for, like, four frames.
Right, it's a brief
that
shot.
Building explodes.
But, yeah, so hopefully the rest of the DC universe can shape up. But, you know, we'll always have Marvel, I guess.
Pretty much.
I don't want to sound like a Marvel fanboy, but, like, at this point.
But we'll always have Marvel.
Yeah. All right, Mike, where can we find you online this week?
You find me at twitter.com/mdfilmblog. You could also find me under mdfilmblog on Letterboxd. And if you enjoy Dungeons & Dragons, my friends and I stream our games on twitch.tv/geonerd79.
All right. And you can follow me on twitter.com/msmithfilmblog, as well as all my podcasts and stuff at filmbook.com, including my podcast about Gotham, another terrible Batman adaptation, and Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Agent Carter. And you can follow me on Letterboxd as well at Mike Smith Film. And you can follow our new Twitter account at filmbookpodcast, where I am tweeting from, and I'm just going to make dumb jokes the entire time, and it's great. You should follow me. And you can keep up to date on every podcast the Filmbook's putting out, including ours, including this, Complete Works, all my other podcasts, and as well as the other podcasts that other people are doing on the site. A lot of good stuff. All right, thank you for listening to Filmbookcast. If you're listening to this review via our podcast on iTunes, please subscribe to our podcast, rate it, take a moment to give us a review. Any and all feedback, compliments, topic discussions, even hate mail can be sent directly to podcast@filmbook.com. Please list the podcast you're emailing about in the title of your email. We do so many different ones, hard to keep track. We would love to hear from you. Join us next week for a new episode of The Complete Works, in which Mike and I will be discussing Nicolas Cage's role in the erotic thriller, Zandali. And join us in 2 weeks. You're really laughing at this.
I'll never get over that sentence, Nicolas Cage's role in the erotic thriller.
And join us in 2 weeks, where I have to actually ask you what you want to review. So. Here's the choices. In 2 weeks, we can either review Richard Linklater's Everybody Wants Some, which I've heard great things about. I'm pretty excited for. Mm-hmm. Or the surprisingly cool-looking Hardcore Henry.
Oh, man. I kind of want to see Hardcore Henry, but I like also kind of don't. I don't know.
I think Hardcore Henry has potential to be pretty fucking awesome. Just like...
I really like Crank, so like there's a good chance...
It looks like Crank.
Yeah, I really like
Hardcore. Exactly the movie that I thought of, too, yeah. But I feel like Everybody Wants Some should be the movie you review. I mean, have you seen any trailers for Everybody Wants Some?
I think I have, yeah. That's like the 80s version of Dazed and Confused, right?
Yeah, yeah. And it's getting phenomenal reviews. Like, it's basically, like, saying it's basically as good as Dazed and Confused.
Wow, okay.
So it's definitely worth checking out. So what of those two, what do you think we should review?
Oh, that's... don't put that on me.
It's on you now. I've already positioned it.
Everybody Wants Some.
Everybody Wants Some. That's good, because Everybody Wants Us.
Hey.
To review Everybody Wants Some. Wow. Emma, right?
Good job, man.
So, yeah, hopefully, I think it's in wide release, so hopefully that is. If not, we'll be reviewing Hardcore Henry.
We'll make another Manhattan trip for that, Mike. For either of those.
I'd be down. All right. Thank you guys so much for listening to Film Bookcast. We are out.
get it. That's just the first verse. Stop.